ministry, or no wonder that they are so invested in our communities. But they do this with schools and school funding. Later this week, I'll tell you more about tools for schools. But as school gets ready to come back up online and come back up and get your kids back in school, think about that. Think about Ingalls and all the great support that they have. It is our awesome friends over at Ingalls. A busy show today. We're at the Arthrex facility here in Anderson and Pendleton. And as we head now, that over the past several years, Arthrex has been one of the upstate's most significant investments in advanced manufacturing, innovation, and workforce development. And from its growing presence here in Pendleton to its partnership with Clemson, the company had a huge impact here in this region and creating jobs and creating so many opportunities. And we are awfully glad to be joined now in Munich, Germany, with the founder and the president of Arthrex, Reinhold Smeeding. Good morning, Reinhold. How are you doing this morning?
Hi, Mickey. Thanks for having me today.
Well, thanks for coming on. Thanks for having us here. I've been to the Naples facility. I've been to this facility. I actually live about 14 minutes from here. And I just want to thank you as an upstate native, what you've done and all the awesome opportunities you have and the unique company you have here. It's been a major part of the upstate, so thank you for that. I'm fascinated by you. I'm fascinated by your story. And I'll let you begin a little bit. In 1981, you founded Arthrex. And kind of give us the genesis and where it came from and really the beginning of the company, what it looked like back then.
Well, I'm originally from Michigan. My parents were German physicians, came to America in the 50s, 1950s. And then instead of going to medical school, I was recruited to go in the orthopedic industry and go to Germany. So I started there in 1977. And then I was watching surgeons do diagnostic arthroscopy here at the University of Munich. And they asked me to produce small instruments so they could actually do arthroscopic surgery on the knee. And that was very new. So out of my small apartment in Lübeck Village in Munich in 1981, as a foreigner here in Germany, by myself without outside financing, I started a company to develop these instruments to allow surgeons to do less invasive surgery of the knee, and arthroscopic surgery essentially was born in the first couple of years of the company.
Mm-hmm. And again, that's in 1981. Tell me about the decision in 91. You decided to relocate and you get your Arthrex headquarters in Naples. What went into that decision?
Yeah, so obviously I wanted to come back to America after 10 years. I was ready to come back. I wanted to manufacture products in America. I'm American, so that's what Americans do, right? We make products in America. So I started manufacturing in America in the early 90s and started building our headquarters in Naples. And then, when manufacturing grew, we really didn't have a community that supported manufacturing in Naples. It's more of a retirement community. We started looking around across the United States where we could invest in manufacturing, and we found South Carolina to be the best state in the Southeast to manufacture products, they were very engaging, and we decided to acquire 220 acres, in Anderson County, and now we have over 2,000 employees and growing rapidly, in South Carolina, producing products in America for the U.S. and, of course, the global market, which I'm servicing right now here in Munich.
Mm-hmm. The Munich aspect's fascinated me. I joked one time when you were in Munich when I was in Naples, and I said, what is he, vacationing over there? Oh, no, Reinhold, he does not vacation. There's none of that going on. Man, the guy's over there working. And how do you decide to split your time, and how does it – is it different on the eastern side there compared to what you do here in the States?
Yeah, well, I'm working 12, 14 hours generally. So I'm addicted to work, and I love what I do. But here, I have to do the international work during the day, then the U.S. work at night, so I have a double shift. Manufacturing people in South Carolina can appreciate what that means, doing a double shift, it's international during the day, and a lot of the emails and phone calls and Teams calls are coming in the evening. So I have to work a little bit longer here than I normally do, and that's for 3 months until I come back to the U.S. End of August. So
Reinhold,
dealing with obviously different cultures, different languages, we have 2,000 European employees that I need to help manage, and we're building a new campus like we have in Naples here in Munich. So we're helping build that, working with the architects. And so a lot of things to do here. About 30% of our products are exported around the world, so it's a big part of our business. So we love making products in America and South Carolina, and 30% of our business is around the world, and that's really what I focus on the 3 months that I'm here.
I am I'm fascinated. Well, a personal question. I'm fascinated by elite minds, elite leaders, elite innovators. At your age, you still look great, by the way, and obviously take great care of yourself. But you know, if you think about it, like what drives you, you've been doing this now since 1981, and you've got, you know, the wealth of the obviously you've made a big impact on you know, tens of thousands of lives. But like getting up in the morning and working 14 hours a day and continuing to grow this company, what's the personal drive? What makes that elite mind get up and do this every single day?
Well, first, I would never consider myself an elite mind. I'm not an elitist. I'm just one of the team, right? You know, so I'm a team player, right? You know, so that's important, right? And then it helps create a great culture. We all work together as a team, and everybody respects each other. So, you know, I've been doing this for 45 years. I've actually been in the orthopedic industry almost 50 years, you know, and I'm working harder now than ever. And I guess what drives me most is that I'm making a difference in people's lives, right? Over 20 million patients will be treated with Arthrex products this year, you know, so to have the impact on patient well-being definitely makes us proud. You know, thousands of surgeons, literally 100,000 surgeons will train in an Arthrex facility this year, and so they can actually treat their patients better, right? So that makes us very proud. And, of course, taking care of our employees makes me very proud. You know, we have almost 10,000 in the United States, you know, 2,000 in South Carolina, 6,000 in Southwest Florida, and I feel responsible for my employees as well. So taking care of them and making people better is also something that drives what I do. So it's really about people over profits. You know, if it was about the money, I would have sold Arthrex and gone public years ago, and I'm still here working 14-hour days to really improve the lives of people around the world through our products, you know, and our company and our employees. That's really kind of drives what I do.
So, Reinhold, this is Steve Martin. You know, we've known each other for a couple decades, and I'll have to disagree with your comment about not being an elite mind. I've been around a lot of very brilliant people in medicine. Medicine is filled with a lot of smart people, and your ability to think in an innovative way. I've been in the lab with you, and you'll be over my shoulder, and you'll point out things that, you know, just almost seem obvious, but nobody thinks of. And it's like you're playing chess, but you're like Messi on the soccer field. You know, you're seven moves ahead of the rest of us. And so, with that in mind, you know, medicine has a lot of challenges, and this to be innovative, and you challenge all your team and your whole company to be innovative, which is why it's one of the reasons why it's so successful and why I love working with you guys. But you know, medicine is being challenged as we move forward. We're being challenged by technology, challenged by AI, challenged by, you know, keeping the personal side of medicine. Where do you, and without obviously not trade secrets, but where do you see medicine going, you know, not just orthopedic surgery, but where do you see medicine 10 years from now?
Dr. Martin, it's really great to talk to you and hear your voice. You know, you're a brilliant surgeon, and we're so proud to have you as a consultant and in taking care of patients, you know, in the region in South Carolina. You definitely would be the surgeon I would go to should I have any sports injury whatsoever, you know, in the region. You know, obviously technology changes everything in medicine, as you know, right? You've been a pioneer in new techniques, and of course, our goal is to make surgery simpler, safer, more reproducible, and less invasive, right? That's what also what patients want.
Right.
They want
right.
the least invasive treatment possible, and technology allows surgeons to provide that least invasive treatment, right? And so that's really what drives what we do, is to provide technology so surgeons like you can really repair or reconstruct a ligament or treat cartilage injuries or arthritis in the least invasive way possible, right? And that's something we do very well. We have over 25,000 products, you know, and, you know, that's what really is going to drive our product developments in the future. You know, how can we provide the least invasive treatment, you know, 5 to 10 years from today? Just biologic injections, you know, may treat a lot of things that we use surgery today. You know, even me personally, you know, I've avoided surgery 20 times just with biologic injections, our PRP
right,
systems.
Exactly.
You know, so I wish more patients knew more about that, you know, and you're one of the leaders in that area. So if anybody goes to Dr. Martin, you're in good hands. So I think biologic treatments are definitely going to be a big part of our future. And then a nanoarthroscopy, which is really reducing the diameter of instruments that are used in surgery. So now instead of having large incisions or even the arthroscope, today is about 6.5 millimeter diameter. It's like a large pencil into your joint. Well, in the future, it's going to be a needle, right? The nanoscope, and you're already using the nanoscope. It's only 2 millimeters in diameter. So now you're getting operated by a needle, right, instead of having a scalpel, right? You know, so I think in the future, you're going to see less and less invasive techniques be developed, you know, and leading surgeons like you will be the early pioneers of introducing those to your patients, you know. So that's how I see the future the next 5 or 10 years.
So we're building a new health campus on Clemson, and it's going to have a surgery center, and Arthrex has been integral with some of the aspects of that and the equipment and things like that. But we're going to have a specific nano needle arthroscopy suite where the room is just designed just for that, which is exciting for me as a surgeon. So that technology is definitely advancing. What has made it easier, I think that's the comment for me, is, you know, orthopedics is a technically demanding surgery, and anything that makes it easier it makes us do a lot better job, and that's what's been so exciting for me.
Yeah, a nice exciting advancement for that nano suite is that many patients can be treated under local anesthesia, right? So they're wide awake, they can talk to their surgeon, they can talk to their family, can take videos, you know, and that's like going to the dentist, right? You know, and you use local anesthesia, and it's a pain-free procedure. And you can look inside of the joint and treat a meniscal tear or small cartilage lesions or, you know, osteophytes, whatever the injury is. You could do it in a treatment room under local, right? And that's what the NanoSuite's going to offer. So that's another exciting development. And that's, of course, going to reduce healthcare costs. You don't need an anesthesiologist. It's a faster procedure. Your pain, post-op pain is going to be much less. Just 2 Band-Aids. There's no incision. There's no stitches, right? And you're going to heal a lot faster and almost eliminate the infection risk, you know? So that's exciting as well. And thanks for being a pioneer in that area.
Yeah, we had one of our Clemson football players that had a high ankle sprain surgery when he was a senior in high school here, and we're looking at doing the high ankle sprain surgery under local with the nano needle. So that's something we're trying to advance actually into this next season. So we're moving forward with that.
Outstanding. Reinold, I can't thank you enough. Get back to that 14-hour workday. I didn't mean to keep you for 15 or 20 minutes, so work a little later tonight then to make sure you get all 14 in.
No problem. It's great to be with you today and, you know, speak a little English instead of German. It feels good.
Mm-hmm. You did great. Hey, thank you so much for having us here at Arthrex today, and I can't thank you enough for coming on. And enjoy your day, and I hope to visit with you sometime soon.
Yeah, thanks for visiting, Mickey, and our employees. Really appreciate you telling the community about our company and our employees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, have a great day. That is Reinhold Smeeding, the Arthrex president and founder, and he can't argue with me now that he's off the line, because I can tell you that is an elite mind. He didn't argue with you, Doc. See, he told me no. Yeah. He's not an elite mind, but you said it, yeah. So it worked out much better there. When we come back, we're going to talk to one of the leading athletic trainers from XPE Sports. Tony Vanali is a Clemson grad, and he works out NFL athletes at getting them ready for the combine and getting them ready for their seasons. We'll ask about that process when you return for more. Short break, much more from Arthrex right after this.
If you don't agree with one of our hosts,
you're an idiot.
I was just joined by two elite minds, and I would dare say that Dr. Steve Martin, that you don't know anything about plumbing. You know about internal plumbing of the body, but how about like plumbing? So it's like, can you do when your plumbing breaks down, your water heater, can you install your water heater?
Absolutely not.
Okay, good. All right, good. Make sure we got that right then. So you're like me. I can fit back in that same category as our
friend. The angles that they have to put those wrenches on.
Yeah.
I'm calling the plumber.
Yeah, it's running downhill.
Yeah, it's not working for me.
One-time plumber, the name is the number, in upstate of South Carolina, Greenville, Spartanburg. Anderson in Columbia and in Charleston. It's Clemson grads. Talking about a lot of Clemson grads here today. It's Clemson grads doing a great job with One Time Plumber. The name is the number. Get in touch with them. One Time Plumber. Speaking of Clemson grads, our next guest is familiar to the Clemson Tiger fans. It's Tony Vannelli, a Clemson graduate, an exercise physiologist, and the founder of XPE Sports and one of the nation's premier performance training organizations in the country, and spent more than 20 years now helping these elite talent form from high school, from college athletes, develop their speed, getting ready for NFL and professional sports, speed and strength and confidence. And for his second time on the show, I think I'm right by saying that, Tony joins us now. Good morning, Tony. How you doing this morning?
Fine. How are you doing? You can hear me okay?
Yeah, I got you great, man. The last time we talked about Shredmill. I got to ask you about that. But and we talked a little bit about your Clemson journey. But let's start now. What kind of experience did you have here? We're in the upset in Clemson. What, did you have a good Clemson experience during your days here?
Yeah, it was great. Nobody thinks I played football there. I didn't play football. I was just a regular student and studying and playing a lot of the intramural sports and pick up a fall at fight athletically. But, yeah, I love my time at Clemson. As most people do, they fall in love with the place and kind of never want to leave, but you have to.
Everybody has a story. What gets you from there to now and founding XPE Sports? What was the journey like for you?
After Clemson, I got a master's degree at George Washington University, and I wanted to stay in sports, but the sector I'm in now really wasn't created. Speed and agility for athletes instead of just lifting weights and, you know, running miles. So I was somewhat lucky to where the sector didn't exist, so I was unique, but it was hard because I had to educate people on the importance of it. So two guys doing it real well early in their career or early in the sports training career was Chris Carter and Randy Moss. They were really on the cutting edge of working on sprinting and, you know, specific drills for route running and stuff. So I was lucky enough to be hired by Chris Carter and got to learn from, I trained them, but I'd learned from them for 3 years. And it wasn't just Chris and Randy. It was, you know, 50 NFL players every offseason. And I got to kind of find my niche of being able to coach speed and agility real well and come up with new ideas. And then that's when I started XPE Sports on my own and moved to Atlanta in 2002.
Now down in South Florida, obviously the journey's taken you there. Tell us about XPE Sports. What is XPE Sports, and how do you guys differentiate yourselves compared to the competition?
It is an all-inclusive facility, but now it's kind of just warped into a major NFL draft preparation place, let's say. But we have of the top 15 fastest times in NFL history, I think 7 or 8 of them are ours, and then the rest of the country has the other half from all the other facilities and trainers. So we kind of developed a way to train speed, at least for the 40, I think it's easy to do if you just focus on the right things, and it's kind of been adopted by a lot of people now. What makes us unique is we came up with a different system on how to coach game speed. That's a term you always hear. It's not just timing a fast 40 and everybody's like, oh, this kid is fast, but he doesn't play fast. And that misconception of how you play fast is what I've been proving the last 8 years. And it's been fun. It's been fun kind of giving the speed knowledge away, passing the speed knowledge on. You want to get your athletes fast. It's, no offense, it's not that hard. It's pretty easy if you just listen to some sound principles that most people now do. But the important thing now is game speed. It's how fast do you play. Someone like y'all have, Sammy Brown, like biggest, fastest linebacker almost there is. Like, he'll show that probably at the combine when he ever gets a chance. And he does play fast, but how do you get him to play faster? Or how does a slower athlete than Sammy Brown as a linebacker make as many tackles as him? They're playing as fast, and that's what I've really been studying, and I think what makes us unique the past 8 years.
Tony, tell me about like what the numbers right now, and it might be a little seasonal too. But how many athletes are you working with?
Well, right, I mean, not named right now. Just pulling up for Travis Kelce's last session, but everybody else who's not a Travis Kelce is already in training camp, so they're gone. So this is like my last day of like, oh, now I get a break after this. But now my breaks aren't breaks of training athletes. They're breaks of, like, developing the treadmill and the XP Gainsy business to help everyone. So the inflow of athletes really train with us for the draft, January, February, into March. Off-season NFL players will come in March and part of April, then be gone. And then you get them for another 3 or 4 weeks around July. So that's like the training cycle for an off-season NFL guy or a college player preparing for the NFL draft. And then after that, it's kind of like what Ryan Hole said. Can't believe I'm backing him or following him up on your show. Like that genius. But, like, yeah, you're still trying to figure out how to still work 12 hours a day because you're still working even though you're not training athletes or your business is going to go away. So now I'm in business planning mode, and I'll travel. Clemson's a school I travel to. Probably another 8 Power 5 programs I travel to and try to help them. A few NFL teams we try to help. And then just a big niche of mine has become helping high school coaches train high school athletes, because that business sector of great strength and conditioning coaches in high school sector with facilities is exploding.
I was talking last week, we had on Will Shipley and Jake Brenning, still a couple of your athletes there, and Jake was talking about Travis Kelce, and I asked him a question. I'll ask you, what is it about the elite athlete? And my guess, the way I framed it to Jake was, man, there's a lot of physical guys, and a lot of guys can do a lot of things physically, but the mental aspect of that, the mind separates it often. What do you see in a Travis Kelce and an elite athlete that might not be there, and someone who's not in the same category?
Ed, it's so funny you said that, because I just retweeted something from Sean McVay. And I was lucky enough to train Sean for 5 or 6 years when he was in Atlanta. And we became friends. And now I'm like real good friends with who's heading up his scouting. We just retweeted something on him as he looks for the mentality of a player that can go through adversity. Like, everyone does it. The word is resilience. Like, how do you deal with bad things and good things? You know, you don't get too high on good, bad on bad. But I have found we can almost get anyone to fit the NFL norm if they're a decent athlete in college, like the physical characteristics. But once when I go through the first test of, not do I like the guy, he doesn't have to like me or like me, but can I hold a conversation with him? And is he likable? Like, is he above the shoulders? Doesn't have to be better than he is physically, but as good. And then you start to see other traits come in as, is he better mentally than he is physically? Can he outthink people? Does he outwork people? Does he outsmart people? Like, all that comes in. And the NFL has all these norms of, we want your height, weight, size, speed, and all that. But what they're really diving into is what you said, who's mentally better than anyone else? And the mentally better people are just better thinkers and figure it out on their own. And I have tons of stories from guy after guy after guy that either figured it out with me or figured it out on his own. And when you meet back with them, if they figure it out on their own, they're speaking the same story to me that I'm speaking to. Like, they just figure out how to play the game on their own.
That varies, that time frame varies. And have you seen it where you might take an athlete and go, man, this guy has, he does not have that, but certain likes come on, experience come on. Like, what's the transition to like a when Travis Kelce comes out of Cincinnati, he's not thought of as an NFL Hall of Famer. Like, how does that like, and how do you identify that? And I guess that's maybe some time spent with him as well.
Yeah, like Travis was kind of hurt during the combine prep process, so he had to do a private pro day. But people don't realize he was 258, ran 4.58, jumped 37 inches on a vert, 10'3" on a broad, nailed the agility test like everybody thinks he could. But that's an elite athlete when he's 22, right? An elite athlete that big and fast and powerful. But then he learned how to slow down. Now, that sounds weird, but he learned how to slow down to play fast. slow down on the field, slow down in the personal life, slow down in training, like slow down everything so you can play fast is something that these elite NFL players have all learned. Where every other college kid is trying to play fast or be rushed to play fast, the great ones start learning the mental ability to slow down to be fast. And that's what's weird. That takes time. Some NFL players never get it, but every NFL player I've worked with that's between year 8 and 12 has understood it on their own, or we've had to teach it to them. Now, Travis is the perfect pupil becoming the scientist, right? But he had learned it from Anquan Boldin and me coaching. I mean, if you listen to Anquan Boldin and Chris Carter and Larry Fitzgerald talk, now Justin Jefferson, who I don't train, and Travis Kelce, who I do, they all speak the same language. And it's this confidence of controlled movement that lets them play fast. So once when you get an NFL guy like Travis, people don't think he's super fast and big, but he was going into the league, and then they learn the next evolution of how do I use this speed instead of always using it, controlling the speed to use it, that's when they take the mental jump of being a great NFL player.
That's fascinating. Hey, just from a business standpoint, I wouldn't market this. We're going to slow you down, you know, at XPE. We're going to speed you up to slow you down. But, word all that. Hey, well, we asked Jake, too, and Jake went. Were you invited to the wedding? Did you do the Taylor Swift Travis wedding?
Yeah, we got invited. It was a wedding. It was a wedding. It was neat. I guess there's a lot of security around. You don't see any. But they just let everybody sit there and mingle.
This is Steve Martin. You know, you've met Mickey. He's an elite athlete in and of himself.
Sure.
And I know you've got a very successful system. With your successful system, what do you think you could get his 40 time down to?
Oh, man, snap a finger, he'll be 4.5.
That's it.
I'm thinking 6.0 is what I'm thinking.
No. Hey, Tony, I'm going to leave you with this. So years ago, now that I'm 58 now, in my early 40s, I've been doing the show for 28 years, and 18 years ago-ish, Rich Eisen did the running the 40.
Yeah.
And I said, man, I can bust 5.0 easy. And someone called and said, no way. So we were going to raise money for charity. We were going to do it at Chick-fil-A in a parking lot. We had it all measured off. And the day before I was supposed to do it,
hamstring.
I said, yeah, man, I said, I need to do this. I need to practice it. So I get my buddies out in the yard, right? And we made get my golf laser out. We measured it out, right? And so I run it, and I said, look, I'm not going to say go. I'm going to do like the combine. When you see me move, you start. And then, all right, so I got it, and I bust it. And they go, oh, man, you did great. This is great. What did I run? And the person at the time said, I thought you said you were going to say go. I went, no. I do it the second time, the loudest pop you've ever heard.
I knew that was coming.
And and my hamstring is blacker than this microphone, man. It was it wasn't good. And you know this, Tony. Hey, you know this. 10 years later, I'm doing an assessment with a trainer about working out, and the trainer said, "Hey, you tore your left hamstring, huh?" I went, "Yeah, 10 years ago."
Yeah.
They can still tell today, right?
Yep.
Isn't that crazy?
It's so the one of the most impressive athletic achievements one can ever do, and all your listeners can try it. You can either go shoot your age in golf, right? And that's hard because you've got to be 65 to 75 and be real good to shoot your age. Or you can run your age in your 40. So now you got to run a 5.8 40.
I have on loafers today, but tomorrow in the parking lot station, I'll report back to you, buddy. We'll take care of that.
You report back because it's hard. For once when you get 50, it's hard to start running in the fours, like hard to break 5.0. So that's a good life goal too.
Tony, one of my tricks of the trade in learning, that I've, you know, talk about learning and changing, is I always shame people into coming back on with me. We've done this before. I'm fascinated by you, your field, your stories. And so I ask you online live in front of our audience, can you do this again? Because you can't turn me down if I ask you on the air. So a phone call is easy to turn down.
Of course.
I'd love to have you on again.
I appreciate you. You put my word out 10, 15 years ago, I think, with a lot of other Clemson athletes I was training. So anything I can ever do, I would love to help you. So I appreciate it.
Hey, do we need to – is there anything we can go online and learn more about XPE or anything like anything we need to promote for you guys?
Yeah, if you just go to xpsports.com, that's the website. Anybody that wants to learn about the whole game speed system, there's an app, XPE Game Speed, on the app stores. It's free, and it teaches parents, kids, everyone, not only how to get fast first, but then how to control that speed and what drills you do to play fast. Because that's where I think the sector is going to go, is they're finally going to understand it is about speed first, but what's next? And that's what we've been trying to develop.
Great stuff. Tony Vinali, always appreciate it, man. Let's get together soon. And anytime you're in Clemson, I'd love to catch up with you.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you. Tony Vinali, XPE trainer for NFL. Fantastic stuff there for sure. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We are now going to – next up is a Hall of Famer, an MMA fighter, Hall of Famer. Cub Swanson will join us. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Much more on the other side after this.
With the Roar app, whenever you're Clemson –
Absolutely fantastic, the experience we had with them. They made it easy. It even made us look pretty good on camera, which is kind of a tough thing to do. Get in touch with our great friends, Double Dog Video. When you need your next video for your company, it's DoubleDogVideo.com. Now, just to catch our breath quickly, we've got a Hall of Famer coming up next. I had a chance a couple days ago to sit down and visit with MMA Hall of Famer Cub Swanson.
Our next guest is true MMA legend, Cub Swanson, who spent more than two decades at the highest level of sport and carrying the reputation of one of the toughest fighters in UFC and ultimately being a UFC Hall of Famer. So after battling through some injuries over the course of his career, he faced a serious back injury. We'll talk about that with him and nearly forced him into retirement. But that didn't happen thanks to an ultra-minimally invasive spine procedure. We'll ask him about how that went and how that's going. So let's welcome to the show UFC Hall of Famer and Arthrex athlete, Cub Swanson. Cub, good morning, man. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for that intro. I appreciate that.
Well, I do this to anybody I know, anybody I have the pleasure of meeting of a Hall of Fame induction. I always say, from now on, you're a Hall of Famer. So that's got a nice ring to it. Hey, do you remind your family occasionally, about doing dishes or about yard work that you're the Hall of Famer around the house?
I wish it worked like that. I still find myself doing dishes, and I think that's good though. I feel like, that keeps me in this reality, not thinking I'm bigger than I am.
Yeah, it's good. Dishes will humble a man every once in a while, I'm sure of that.
100% they will.
Yeah. Hey, looking back at it, two decades competing at this MMA level, a high level, as you step back and review it, like, how does it feel? You look back at your accomplishments and how would you categorize that that very successful career?
I feel proud, and really just, looking at how far I've come, and it all really just keeping my head down, focusing on what I was trying to accomplish, and just trying to absorb knowledge along the way, and just you kind of keep putting things on your shoulders and keep moving forward. And as you get stronger, you got to learn how to take on more responsibilities and not fail. And over the course of 22 years, I feel like I was able to carry quite a load and keep moving forward. So I'm very proud of what I've done. And I'm happy with my career, all my wins and my losses.
Yeah, it's an amazing sport, and it's amazing that you're able to do it physically and mentally. The demand for 20-some-odd years of that, to compete at an elite level. Talk about both those demands. First, the physical demand, because very few of us have any idea what that feels like. But then compare that to the mental demand of putting your body and your mind through what you had to go through.
Yeah, I mean, physically, it's kind of like torture, You really got to be able to grind and push your body to new, limits. And then mentally, it's just the stress of it. You're constantly in this mental battle of not wanting to lose, not wanting to disappoint anybody, not wanting to be embarrassed. And you put this pressure on yourself. And then when it comes time to the fight, like, little things can kind of set you off. Like, people just asking you, what time is your fight on, or what channel? You're like, look it up on the internet. Don't ask me questions like that. It just gets you a little snappy because they don't realize, they're just fans, but they don't realize like how stressed and what kind of a burden you're carrying around. So that's exhausting, and you got to be mentally and physically tough.
How about the aging process too? I imagine your body at 20 was different than it was 10 years in, 15 years in. Tell me about the demands and how maybe you changed the way you trained or changed the mental aspect of an I don't say an aging fighter, but got in it that long, that longevity. That had to be different the way you attacked that. Maybe experience-wise you knew more, but physically, man, it's got to be putting some toll on your body, cumulative effect of that.
Oh, 100%. The biggest thing when you're young, you have to do everything 1,000 times and do it over and over and over. You have to create this muscle memory. And then you got to realize as you get older, okay, it's more about quality reps, not volume. And then, you know, when I was fighting these last couple of years in my 40s, it was really about trusting the process, doing the reps, even if you're not getting the best outcome, it'll get there on the day it needs to happen, you know? So you just got to trust the process. Being fighting at 42 years old with 3 kids and a wife and coaching and doing all these extra things, I was limiting myself to 4 days a week of hard training and then 3 days a week of recovery and focusing them on the other portions of my life. So yeah, it was difficult, and you really got to be smart when you attack it.
So I you know, I talked to Navy SEAL guys or special ops guys. I had to be friends of, and when you talk about, like, it is a different mindset. I'm guessing that an MMA fighter is the same way. That it's just different than what you're probably wired a lot different than almost everybody else who's listening this morning.
Yeah, 100%. I think that, you know, Navy SEALs and Delta officers and any kind of military, that, you know, they're one notch ahead of us for sure. But I think we're the next category, right? Where we're playing a very dangerous game as well. It's not life and death, but it could be. And so, yeah, you got to be very focused and you got to be able to push through. And I will say that ever since I did like a UFC main event and was doing 5 5-minute rounds, a 25-minute fight, like after I did a couple of those, everything in life just seemed easy.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that too. It does prepare you. We talk about, I know you play golf now, like this microcosm, and I know MMA is probably the same way, man. The challenges of life. We're here with Cub Swanson. He holds the record for the most post-fight bonus awards in UFC, and obviously had a tremendous Hall of Fame career. Cub, you dealt with broken hands, broken jaw, facial reconstruction, torn ACL, and I'm sure many other injuries. But I think I read it right. You said that the back injury that the folks here at Arthrex can speak to, and you can speak to now, was the biggest threat to your career. Walk us through that injury and what it was like facing it, and then I want to get into the surgery and then the post-surgery and how successful it was for you.
Yeah, so basically I've always had a weaker lower back, and just because of my posture, runs in my family, and then being an athlete for so many years, you learn to kind of compensate. And just I knew that my back was going to be the thing that would probably cause me to stop fighting. And I just kept putting it off and just grinding through. And, you know, about, what is it, like 19 years into my career, slowly it kept progressing, this pinching in my back kind of hip area, the sciatic nerve. And it got to the point where I was in bed trying to fall asleep after a hard day of training and then just feeling like I got stabbed in the back and just this pain that was unbearable. And then having to deal with that and then thinking, how am I going to fight like this? So anyways, I ended up going to see a very well-known doctor, and he told me the usual, oh, you got to have a disc replacement or a fusion. And he said, I wouldn't suggest any of those for you because you're still active, but if you get your core stronger, I think you'll get better. And I was very upset with that because I didn't think that was very good advice at all. Then I had heard about this doctor that was doing a different kind of procedure that could go in there and clean it out. And it was like non-invasive. And all I kept hearing was, you can walk out of surgery. And I was like, I could walk out of surgery? And they were like, yeah. And I was like, that's the one for me. And after meeting Dr. Galagli and seeing all the things he does, I was sold. And yeah, I feel very fortunate that a third option was presented to me that nobody else was telling me about.
So I think here's my guess, and correct me if I'm wrong, as a fighter and a guy that was that experienced, you put your whole career into it, I'm guessing it's important for that you go out your way rather than someone other, you know, because so many people don't have that opportunity. Did that surgery allow you to do that? And if it did, like, how important was it that it was your terms rather than, you know, something that you couldn't control?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I wanted to finish my career on my terms, and I wanted to do it with beautiful performances, not feeling like I don't have it anymore. And I feel like on my last couple fights, I peaked, and I'm very happy to walk away going, I don't think I'm going to do better than this. I'm very happy with my performance. And not only that is now I can focus on coaching and being a dad. My boys, they play soccer, and they're getting to the age where they want to roughhouse with me a little more, or get me to go to the park and play soccer with them. And what kind of father would I have been to give everything in the cage and then be broken afterwards and not be able to give some to my own kids? So that was very important to me, and it did breathe new life into myself, my career, and myself. So I'm very grateful.
That's awesome, man. I know that's a big – I know they're glad to have it. I know you're glad to have it as well. What's the rest of retirement like look for Cub Swanson?
Just staying busy. To me, it's retirement, but it's not really about the end of my story. It's about the next chapter, right? And so I opened up my gym, and I'm coaching 5 days a week, and I have a pro fight team, but I'm also teaching some kids classes, but mostly like adult beginners. And I, as much as I love to see fighters, you know, going in there and being on the big stage, I also have a huge passion for somebody who's could never dream of fighting, and then they, all of a sudden we're getting them ready for an amateur fight, and maybe they'll just do one, but just to do it, to me, that's just as exciting. I want to give back, and I want to help change people's lives.
Yeah, that's awesome, and thank goodness that the procedure worked, and you're able to do that physically, get in there, and mentally still get and do that. Hey, I got to ask you a quick one about the industry. A lot of our listeners were tuned in Saturday night. McGregor, is he done? Is there any way at all you come back from all these things, all this adversity? Is he done or not?
He's still going to get offered a lot of money. I think the one thing you have to say is the way he didn't finish the fight. That shows me that you're not mentally there, yeah. You know, because real fighters fight. A couple fights earlier than that, Corey Sandhagen tore his quad, his hamstring, and kept fighting and lost the fight, but he kept trying, and he did a great job. To see somebody bow out like that, getting paid that much money, it's kind of like, wow. I think if you got to show you're a warrior in that circumstance. And so, yeah, I don't know. I think he'll come back and do another one, but I think he lost a lot of fans.
Yeah. I won't pay for it, I can tell you that much. Hey, Cub,
yeah.
You got fans here now. I want to spend some time on YouTube over the next couple of weeks watching some of the stuff, man. Congratulations on a great career, a Hall of Fame career. Just as importantly, congratulations on fatherhood and the gym and everything. We wish you all the success, and I can't thank you enough for being with us today.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. Like I said, I'm very proud of my career, and last thing I'll say is with the Arthrex procedures they're doing, it's very important to find the right doctor, and it's important to find all your options, because when it comes to back and spine surgery, most of the doctors are trying to take your money, and they're not really caring about how you live the rest of your life. So do your research and find the best option for you, because I know so many people that regret having surgeries that they probably shouldn't have had. Mm-hmm. And so do your research, and good luck. And if somebody hears this and it saves them, then I'm grateful to do this.
Well, I appreciate that. But one of my friends here, Dr. Steve Martin, Arthrex doctor, says that you take ownership in your health care, and you're a great example of that as an Arthrex athlete and a Hall of Famer as well. Hey, Cub, much success. Thank you so much, man, and love to hear from you again maybe sometime.
All right. Anytime.
Thank you, sir. Cub Swanson, bye. UCF Hall of Famer, UFC Hall of Famer and Arthrex athlete.
We'll take a top of the hour break.
Our next guest is true MMA legend, Cub Swanson.
Short break. We'll come back much more when you return for hour number three.
WCCP-FM 105.5 Clemson. Greenville Anderson. WAHD-AM 1560. Cowpens. 97.5 Spartanburg. We are the Roar.
Favorite show, the best sports talk plays on your schedule.
Yeah, baby.
All shows are online on the podcast page.
And ready to play when you want.
This is awesome.
Download the Roar app.
or visit theroarfm.com. No scripts.
No spin.
Yeah. Just the truth.
105.5 and 97.5.
The Roar. Where